in to Athletics Double LC. With Lamar, Lucius, Big League Chew, and my man Clyde, and the governor. You're about to be schooled in all things track and field. This is experience.
Yes, sir.
We are talking past, present, future. Y'all listen up. Let's go.
Hello, Athletics LLC world. Whoop, whoop. We're back. Back and bigger, better than last week. And then we'll be bigger and better next week. So, welcome one, welcome all. Here for another enticing, invigorating, educational video show for us. I don't know where I just went with that. Sorry. So, let's say hi to everyone as they stand or sit in their tiles. Sir Lucius, how are you today, sir?
I am doing absolutely wonderful, my dear. How are you?
I'm well. I'm not coherent as to where I am and what time it is, but that's okay too. So, yeah. But we'll keep moving. We'll keep moving. Governor, how are you today, sir?
Doing well. I can't complain. It's nice and warm.
Right.
Yeah, it is. So you got to take advantage while you can. It's exam week, so everybody's all over the place. And, we'll reel them in next week.
For everyone that doesn't know right now, so I'm in Houston, obviously not close, but closer to where you are. And it was 80 degrees today. Mm-hmm. I stepped off the plane and didn't know what to do with myself. Mm-hmm. I was so confused. So confused.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, man. Lamar, blood from my eyes, Huffins. How you doing tonight, sir?
Doing very well. I figured I'd wear sunglasses, so I didn't unleash this venomous blood on y'all tonight.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. That's really funny.
Listen, I don't go to TCU. I don't work at TCU. I just call it like I see it. And people have been trying to come up my neck today. So I have given them all. Listen, you would have thought that I got 3 degrees from TCU the way I was riding for the Horned Frogs today. But all my mama, they done made me a TCU fan. How about that?
I mean, I can think of a couple tickets that you can pay off of bills that would make you a great donor. So just hit my email. I got you. Just kidding. Last but never least, Clyde, how are you doing today, sir?
Right on time, apparently. Let's go.
In there like swimwear. All right. Well, let's just get into the madness and the chaos that we call Athletics LLC. This is a question that we wanted to make sure that we had Sir Lucius on the tiles for before we addressed it. Primarily, what are the biggest differences between being a successful pro coach and a successful collegiate coach?
Well, we definitely need to save his answer for last. So I'll sacrifice myself and go first.
Jump off the cliff first.
I'll say, I think to be a successful collegiate coach, there's a certain amount of management that has to happen. Management of personalities, muting of fires before they become fires, those kind of things. And I'm not saying that there's not management required at the pro level, but I think more so at the pro level, it's being professional and treating both yourself and your charges as professionals, making them treat the game as professional. And, there's nothing imagined. It's all real. Like, this is what it takes to do. You need to do it this way. You know, you follow my lead. You know, my promise is I'll get you prepared to do what it is that we're trying to get done. And we're all going to be graded at the end of the year. There's far less ambiguity about being a pro coach. I would say that both have their merits. They're very, very different, I think. And I think the primary difference is just at all times you need to remember and remind yourself, no matter how much you really like, love, or even dislike your professional athlete, it's a job and it's a profession, and you need to be professional, as do they.
I will jump in here because I'm sure I'm going to hear better things from the next two. I agree with blood in my eyes here on what he said. But how do I explain this? It's a very nuanced difference, right? Now, the X's and O's of performance doesn't really change too much for my taste. Different times of year, different priorities, right? But for me, the biggest difference has been this. As the coach, your dynamic and your angle of professionalism, in my opinion, has to actually shift. Because at the collegiate level, you recruit these kids, you bring them to your program, you know, you're trying to help some of them grow up, and ultimately it's everybody hopefully is working towards the same mission that ultimately is working at the university. We're trying to win something for the university, for our team. It's a very different dynamic. And oh, by the way, I'm in charge, right? When it shifts to the pros, like it or not, you're technically an employee of said athlete. And it's a different engagement and hopefully a different type of professionalism. You have to be professional in both realms, right? But at this point, now these people are out here racing for their own livelihoods, and you're supposed to be a tool, a conduit, a part of the team that is Kareem Street Thompson. And if you work for Kareem Street Thompson, then those conversations between coach and athlete have to be different, in my opinion. I serve at the pleasure of San Jose State and work with my student athletes. I don't work for my student athletes. If I have a professional athlete, I am working at their pleasure. And both of us can, you know, discontinue that relationship in any time we see fit. But at the end of the day, it's their career. And the way that I interact with them and the way that I, you know, motivate and push and prod and try to get them to understand the bigger picture is a little bit different than an 18, 19, 20 year old kid who's supposed to be here racing for the job that I have. If that, hopefully that makes sense. I just think the professionalism is wildly different.
All valid points. You know, I'd say one of the major differences is that for a collegiate coach, there are probably about three different stages that you go through, you know, where athlete A comes into your program and you are basically teaching them your system, you are getting them refined, whatever it is they did in high school or whatever the former program they're at. You are tightening things up, you're getting them to understand, okay, this is how we are going to do things properly, okay? The next stage is execution. They now have to go and take that now and go through the ups and downs of, you know, all right, I'm listening to what you're saying, I'm trying to execute it. And then there comes to the point where they're actually feeling it and they can actually go through a rep and come back and give you feedback. And that's when it becomes a two-way street, right? In theory, a professional coach is always going to be a two-way street, right? They already know they're good. They've already achieved amazing things. At that point, now the line is very, very small, okay? The differences that you're going to make are going to be minimal at best. And you are essentially coaching them to coach themselves, right? And you are now a partner, you know, and Clyde, you know, spoke on this as well, but there's a big difference, right? Because the minute things go south, that mm-hmm. athlete has every right to say, you know what, coach, thank you for your help, but I'm gonna exit stage left. And that is, by far, I think one of the biggest differences between coaching a professional and coaching a collegiate athlete.
You hope it's that respectful. They could just fire you via email.
Absolutely. You could find out about it on social media.
Right.
Well, I mean, I think for me, I think that the whole deal for me is like the coach knowing what they want, knowing what it looks like. Because if you don't know what you want, you don't know what you look like, you know, when you get there, you got no clue what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And I am totally in disagreement with the, when I'm coaching a professional, it's a partnership. Because if you're going to fire me, I'm going to rob the train, right? I'm not collaborating. You're not going to come in and say, hey, I'm firing you because we didn't do this. Well, if you're firing me, then I'm going to be in total control of the situation. And it's like, okay, you hire someone to fix your car. You don't then go stand over their shoulder and watch them fix it. You hire someone to build you a house. You don't come in and tell them how, you know. So if you have the confidence in me to hire me to be a professional coach, then let me do my job. And that's just how I roll. And I think that the most of the successful professional coaches roll that way. You know, it's a partnership of built on trust. You trust me to do my job. I trust you to trust me that I know what I'm doing. So I think the biggest thing is with the professional level coach is knowing the end game and more importantly, knowing what it looks like when you get there, because everybody wants to coach an Olympic medalist, but everybody doesn't know how.
Great points. And I think there are different points than people thought that would come out of the mouths of the tiles. So good perspective. And I think that last piece that you just said, Sir, was just about knowing what the end game is, though primary to the pro group, definitely applicable to any level. And that determines the success. And as well, it determines the ability to quote unquote level up the status of what you're trying to do, whatever that might be, whether it could be the best high school coach, best middle school coach, best pro coach. So without right. that identification, you can't do that. So
I had a quickie
good question. Answers, good answers. What's that?
I had a quickie question. Do you guys think that it is substantially different coaching a professional that came from another program versus coaching a professional that came out of your own program?
The only difference is that the person that came here for the other program has to be taught more in the beginning. For me, anyway.
No, I do. I think it's different. And I've been through this a little bit in a different context, but I think it's different because I would imagine, and I'm going to use Sir Lucius. I'm going to take the audacity to use Sir Lucius as the example. If a Gator, and there's a lot of them, run well enough to turn pro, their development has come under the guise and the eye and the care of Sir Lucius. So, hey, we're turning pro. Whatever small little changes, whatever conversations need to be tweaked. But at the end of the day, we're going to keep this train rolling. He's already built in the trust and the respect and the I know what I'm doing here and why. If I am coming from a different place and arrive on his campus, that trust has to be built. I don't know any athletes that just give it to you willingly. They may respect him if they're smart enough to know the resume and see the success, but that trust has to be built when they arrive. And that's building trust is very, very different than once you already have it. And so for me, I think someone who you brought up as a collegiate turning pro, that transition is easier than inheriting a pro who probably in most cases is coming to you because thing one didn't work, or in some cases thing two and three and four didn't work, right? So I think that's a different type of interaction. I think that way is harder, actually.
Got it. All different perspectives and scenarios, and there'll always be a new one somewhere down the timeline. All right, so let's make a giant leap over the pond, no pun intended, pun intended. Athlete of the Year, award given by the World Athletics Organization. Sydney McLaughlin and, oh my gosh, Mondo. Who's the male?
Mondo.
There you go. I was like, I can see the picture and I can't think of it. and Mondo were the recipients. Did they get it right?
I got no problem with it. I mean, they absolutely got it right from my eyes. I mean, I know they're, I mean, like at any award, you can make an argument for a lot of people. And even though Sid didn't run a lot, when Sid ran, she ran. I mean, geez. Just the most dominant force in track and field right now. She just pummels people, pummels records. Just, you know, she's been phenomenal every time she steps on the track. And when Mondo's concerned, I just, more than anything else, you know, besides the record breaking and, you know, the dominance that he's shown, I just think the excitement he's brought back to the event, you know, and the way he choreographs it to make sure he's the last guy on the track. A lot of showmanship on his part. So for me, I think they absolutely got it right.
I didn't think you were going to agree with that, actually. That's interesting. I'm going to say they got it right. And I totally hold out space for other arguments. I could easily be persuaded off of mine, but it depends on how you see the athlete of the year. And we've had these conversations in different contexts before, right? Sydney is at the top of the highest mountain, and the gap between her and whoever the hell else is an ocean, right? So if you look at it in the women's context of who is the face, the domination, the who defines what it is to be great in this sport this past year, easily Sid. For my money, I give it to Sid. But to the point, if you look at the season in totality, we didn't see Sid that much. You know what I mean? So if you're the type of fan that appreciates the access and true domination of the pro season from start to finish, you could easily say it was Shelly. And I'm cool with that. Shelly ain't bring no records. So, you know, Shelly being Shelly, you know, being the 100-meter goat that she is, she dominated the competition. Opened fast, stayed fast, never really was challenged. She dominated, but Sid was just at a level of spectacular that is different. And for Mondo, in his context, has the sport in his hand. He literally changes the meet schedule on the run to make sure that all eyes are on him, all cameras are on him. The meet apparently doesn't end until after the 4x4 now. Because Mondo said so, right? Mm-hmm. And no one's going to beat him. So to go back to what I said, you know, about Sid's, Mondo has both sides. He has the start to finish pillar to post domination of the sport, and we see him all the time, and no one's close to him. Him versus their competition, his dominance of his competition versus everybody else on theirs. The men I thought was easy. The women, I thought there was some case to be made, depending on how you looked at it.
I get why Sydney and Mondo were voted Athlete of the Year. But in my opinion, Rojas deserves, I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, she pretty much has rewritten the books in the triple jump. And continues to do so. And everybody that is watching knows that we still haven't seen the best of this young lady and what she can do.
May I interrupt you for 1 second?
What's that?
Are you talking about Rojas or Sydney right now?
Rojas.
I know, but you could be talking about Sydney as well.
I think the goalposts are a little different. And the folks
say, don't go governor on me. I'm just saying, you could be describing Sydney if you want to go on governor rush on me. Come on now. Don't do that to me. I'm just saying, if you just take the name off of it, you could have been talking about Sid. Right?
Yeah, yes, okay. Absolutely. Right. Yes. Right. So
forgive me for interrupting.
from a coach's standpoint, this young woman still has not unfurled her step phase yet. And that is what is absolutely scary about what we're about to see. So I mean, no issue with Mondo whatsoever. I just feel like some consideration. I mean, I would have been good with Rojas being given that title.
Whew. Well, here's what I'm gonna say. And y'all who know me really well will probably be shocked by this. I am super duper excited to be wrong, because who I would have voted for actually won. But I never in my wildest dream thought that World Athletics was going to think like me. Like, the very, very best thing that happened in women's track and field this year, the very best singular event, right? As hard as it is to go past Toby Amazon's 12-12, let's be clear, that's the most shocking thing that happened this year, right? But the best thing that happened this year on the women's side was just watching Sid be Sid. But I just, look, I thought they were going to give it to Shelly for spending the time in Europe, for running really fast all year, even though her marks, however really awesome they were, are inferior to both Sid's and Yulimar Rojas. I think Yulimar Rojas is maybe even better at her craft than Mondo is at his. Like, we're definitely splitting hairs, but at this point, those two are better at what they do than everybody is, as is Sid, right? So at the end of the day, like, we're picking winners amongst winners. But I was flabbergasted that they actually finally gave a field event to the props that he deserves, because let's be clear, Mondo's season, as awesome as it was, wasn't as good as the season Krauser had just a year before, and he didn't win.
They gave it to Warholm, aka Sid.
They gave it to Warholm. And so, you know, like, look, I'm stupid enough to think that World Athletics is going to think linearly, right? And you know, like, I thought that the field eventer was going to lose to a track athlete. So, look, I was pleasantly surprised that, you know, for once we kind of gave the field events at least an even shot at winning, because I mean, there's no question, like, Mondo was the best thing to happen in men's track this year. Mm-hmm. Period. Right? And I the unfortunate part is, I think Rojas didn't win because she's competing against herself. Right? Like, she broke the world record indoors, but didn't break the world record outdoors. I mean, never mind the fact that she has the world record. It's hers. Right? But because she didn't break the world record and just went undefeated and just won world championships, it wasn't enough. So I got no issues with Sid winning. I thought it was amazing. If it was going to be off of like one ridiculous performance, I thought it was going to be Toby Amazon. But I just didn't think they were going to give away the AOI to the superstar performance, because Shelly Ann's, her season has never happened. Right? 7 times under 1070 is,
yeah. You know, like, there was a lot of, you know, like, even talk, you know, what Shelly did was phenomenal, and what Toby did was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Sid broke the world record by almost a full second.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if it's the performance of the year, it's Sid. I mean, I think, you know, just when Toby did, people are like, oh my God, it was 12-1. But there's not a person on the planet other than Bobby Kersey that really thought Sid was going to run 50.6 over hurdles. You did.
Sir.
Stop it.
Sir.
Wait, don't stop. Stop. You stop talking. Let me say this, because you're going to pontificate.
No, I'm not.
I will say this out loud for people to hear. Clyde actually called that. He did. And it's crazy, as good as she looked all year, and in particular in the, like,
let me revisit this. Okay, so maybe you saw it coming after you watched her run this year. but I don't think. Okay, hey, then you called it.
all I'm gonna say is this: like, look, at the end of the day, I think, you know, the rarest of all rare things has happened. All four of us, and I believe that I even speak for Big League, I think we all agree that for once they actually got it right.
Yes,
yeah. They did.
World Athletics and Georgia voters.
Oh, that's cool. See. All right,
We're not doing this.
Maybe someone actually sent them a clip of our video from last year's synopsis of the selections.
One can only hope.
I mean, in my head, it was Sean Pickering. So Sean's like, you need to look at this.
I like it.
Right. Shout out to Sean. Well, you know, Clyde made it just in time to go over the CFP. And, you know, and I'll let you all know, not that it's super important or anything like that. I actually woke up and turned the TV on for the announcement of the rankings. Because honestly, this week, right, with the supposed, and they're not supposed, but the results that we got that were major FUBARs by two teams, like, you kind of had to wonder what was going to happen, even though we know we all said what we should or what should happen or what we thought should happen, things of that nature. Like, you kind of had to be there. I didn't want to see it on social media. I didn't want to have the text messages of Lamberger and you know. So college football playoff selections and the selections that were made, what are your thoughts?
Oh, listen. We're not one person gets to speak until Clyde speaks.
I mean,
you got at least set the table for this.
Honestly, it was very anticlimactic. It is what it ultimately was. And let me be clear. Y'all know I said this to you via text message. I know they shuffle people every year into the room, right? This room seems to have more sense than people in the past. I was waiting for the shenanigans, especially with the potential chaos of the losses in the title games. Look, I said it, TCU deserve to be in regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, and that's fine. And I hope they play well. I don't like that Ohio State is in, but what the hell else were they supposed to do? There's no universe where Alabama deserved to be in, and I'm glad that they avoided that nonsense. I absolutely enjoyed watching Nick Saban have to pander and make horrible excuses for his team. Every year, the team's on the bubble, their coaches go on ESPN and pander. And honestly, most of the time, they have pretty good arguments. The best thing Nick could come up with was, well, Vegas would probably have us favored. That was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. But listen, everybody enjoys watching the king grovel every now and then, and that was fun to watch. So at the end of the day, USC fumbled the bag. It's year one. Can you really be all that critical about it? Caleb Williams got beat down in the game. He was hobbled. He couldn't be Superman. I still think he deserves the Heisman, but they fumbled the bag. And once again, Pac-12 proves just how impossibly difficult it is to dominate that conference. Mm-hmm. Props to Utah.
Record, wasn't I the first person on the Utah bandwagon like week one?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And Utah's been an exceptionally good team for a long time.
I know this much. Lincoln Riley was not happy they had to play Utah. I know that.
That's the last team he wanted to see, because Utah just a bunch of little goons. Like, they don't care.
Look, Sonny Dykes didn't really want to play Kansas State either. Let's just call it what it is.
Well,
there's just some teams you don't want to play.
So there wasn't a lot of drama. They got it right. Ohio State slides in on the back end. They're going to get bounced thoroughly in the first game, and we'll see who emerges from the other one. I'll take Michigan over TCU easy.
I agree with myself. I agree as well with the selections. You know, I think part of what we're watching and what's unfolding. I think the CFP and NCAA and Power Five, I think they enjoy the buildup just as much as the actual selection. It's important that Alabama is in the picture somewhere lurking. That's important, right? Because you've got the Alabama faithful that are looking at it like, man, like, we're better than them. Why aren't we even being considered, you know? And, you know, when TCU lost, it was actually kind of, it's kind of heartening to see that most people with level-headedness were all rooting for TCU to stay in there, and, you know, that the selection committee did the right thing. They deserve to be in the playoff. So, you know, I just think a lot of it was just a lot of smoke, a lot of just, you know, building things up, and but ultimately they got it right.
Yeah. I want to get out of the way because I certainly want to sit here popcorn ready for Sir Lucius's pontification. I will say, I at least get a little bit of check, right? Like I was on the same bandwagon with Sir Lucius as to who the four would be a couple of weeks ago. But I'll say this. I don't think there's any doubt that they got 1, 2, and 3 right. And and four, because in order, Tennessee, Clemson, LSU fumbled the bag, right? So because those things happened, four was always going to be the shiniest turd, right? Like, it, like at the end of the day, like Ohio State had the worst optic loss, not necessarily the worst loss of all, because I mean, LSU's loss was the worst loss. They lost to a horrible team, but because when the game is, everybody watched the game and they got dump trucked by 3 touchdowns, right?
They should have been disqualified.
So that's a tough one, right? That's a tough one to swallow. You know, look, it is very entertaining to watch Nick Saban have to grovel, but it is also, it's one of those things enlightening, like, just look, obviously anybody who knows me knows I'm not an Alabama fan. If anything, I'm an anti-Alabama fan, but I will say this. This is how good they have been. This is the worst Alabama team in like a decade, and they have 2 losses by a total of 4 points, in the last play of the game in both games, right? Look, that's what it is, but that's how good they have been, is like, that's what it took for them not to be in the CFP. So I will at least give, you know, 2 moments of silence for Alabama's decade of disgustingness. That being said, I don't really care how you lost. If you've lost twice and you don't play in your conference's championship, no matter what conference that is, it's a force fit to get you into the CFP. But the reality of the situation from this guy's perspective is this. Here's the truth about where we're at in college football. There's one dominant team. It's Georgia. Georgia would be favored if they played anybody. And Georgia would probably beat anybody. Neutral field, no shenanigans. There's 2 more teams truly deserving because they've had outstanding seasons. Michigan and TCU. Nobody knows how good, quote unquote, they are because it's college football. Then after that, there's a cast of characters that would be the 4th best team. So what that tells you is, like, this is probably just Georgia's year. I don't think anybody will be surprised if Georgia slaps Ohio State to sleep, and then whatever carcass is left from the TCU Michigan bloodbath. I think it's laughable that people think Michigan is going to run over TCU. And here's why. Michigan can't score like that. They scored like that one time on an Ohio State team that was shook. But the truth of the matter is Michigan's team is not an offensive team. They don't score like that. TCU's team scores on everybody. And this game is probably going to be a lot closer than people think it is. And I obviously think TCU is going to win. But at the end of the day, I don't think the conglomeration of those two teams probably beats Michigan. I mean, beats Georgia. So we're just in that weird year where there's one really, really dominant team. And there's just not that really, there's not that much ambiguity to it this year. Like Kirk Herbstreit said, like, because of the late losses, like the CFP show was sort of kind of boring. Because there really wasn't that much. Like if you take emotion out of it, there really wasn't a lot of ambiguity. Like you probably could have guessed who the four were going to be with relative ease.
I mean, I told you guys like 6 weeks ago who was going to be in here. Nobody wanted to listen. So I don't know what the big problem is here. So, like, I mean, for me, they got it right. And you know, the Alabama faithful who thought Alabama was going to get in by some hope and a prayer were delusional. There's no world where a two-loss team gets in. Mm-hmm. I think we were all, most of us were in agreement that Michigan, Georgia, and TCU are going to get in even if they lost in their championship game because they were undefeated. And that left them with one loss, so they were going to get in anyway. I'm not sure that Ohio State is ready for Georgia, but I mean, they're the next one in line, you know, based on history, based on what they've done in the past. They were the best team there. And that's, you know, that's what it comes down to. Alabama shot themselves in the foot with their two last second losses. If you watch the beginning of the USC game, USC came out with a lot of fire and a lot of passion. Like they were trying to run US Utah off the field, and Utah hit them in the mouth one time and they never responded. You know, they never responded. And so again, I think they got it right. It kind of played out, you know, close to the way, you know, the four teams away up the way I thought it would be. And the way they got there was a little different than I envisioned, but, you know, still worked out the same way. So I don't know what the problem is with anybody has a problem with the four teams, because they are who they are and the four teams are supposed to be there. So just for future reference, it's 2 years in a row I picked the Final Four. So if you want to do the Final Four, call me about, you know, 50 weeks, I'll let you know.
Hey, we got to let my man sit in that, though. Like at the end of the day, listen, my hat's off to you, sir. At the end of the day, I, you know, real recognize real, and it's well done. Well done this year.
Thank you,
sir. Wait, so does that mean you have the Powerball or the Mega Millions numbers too?
Right. Can I get some numbers, though? Can I get the numbers?
I need to do a little research. Mm. Yeah, you know, I'll get back to you. We might as well all hit it and walk off into the sunset together, right?
I mean, listen,
I'm a fan.
All for that, right?
I'm here for that.
I'm good on that. Yes, sir. Well,
so I just have one question, and let's please keep Brian Prince brief. Hester's brief. Are any of you guys excited about the upcoming 12-team playoff in a couple of years?
Yes.
I'm super excited about it.
I'm
like to the point where, like, because I really hadn't paid any attention to it, but when they put it up, I was like, wow, this is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I'm
gonna give Clyde props, because it really sounds like some of the private conversations we've had about Power Fives and, you know, giving credit to people to win their conferences and stuff like that. So I don't know if they were listening to you, Clyde, but they had some of your stuff was in there, man. So that was good.
Somebody has to eventually, right?
I am all in it with one tweak, and I get why they did it, but they did. It's like one of those things, like they thought it through, but didn't think it all the way through. The top four teams, the top four Power Five champions get a bye, right? I'm here for that. And then you got the next eight, and the top seeded team gets a home game. I'm here for that. The problem is the next round. Those are all at neutral sites. And so in my mind, I'm like, so let me get this straight. I'm a top four team in the country and I don't get a home game, but I'm number 5, 6, 7, and 8, and I do.
But you get a bye.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so all right. Okay,
do you,
Hold on a second. Let me educate young fella here, right? It's money, man.
That's all. So, look, I know right. what it is, right? It's, we got to feed the bowls. At the end of the day, right. we have to keep the bowls relevant. When the truth of the matter is like, listen, we should have burnt these bowls up a long time ago.
Well, you can't because you need the money. And it's always going to be about money. It's always going to be about television dollars. And I tell you what, I promise you, number five would trade with number four any day for the extra week off.
Oh, sure. I mean,
So I'm going to let you go play on your home field, and I'm going to sit at home and watch it on TV.
Yeah.
Right? And then I'm going to meet you at the ball game in a couple of weeks after that.
I'm sitting in that spot in our fantasy football league, and I just chuckle. I'm like, I don't have to worry about football for like the next 3 weeks.
The quarterfinal round has to be played at neutral sites, but bowls aside, it has to be.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
What I'm wondering is that does this take a game off the regular season schedule? Because I'm trying to add this up.
Mathematically, it doesn't have to.
No,
it doesn't have to. But it might get rid of some of the week zero things, Governor. But like, I don't think it will. Yeah. Mm.
But yeah. I see your point, if you're in 9 through 12, you could play 14 games.
Yes.
Right.
And here's the thing. Remember that, you know, if it gets to be a problem early on, they will take games away.
Yeah.
You know, people will figure it out. So,
I mean, let's be honest. If you're 9 through 12, you are praising Jesus you play 14 games. Because that means you made it to the national championship game, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
You'll take that.
Actually, that might be 15 games. So,
you know, you'll take that.
All right, big league. I'm sorry.
Wow. All right. Well, without any, I think I like this method, even though you guys probably keep better track than I do of not telling you who's going to be on Would You Rather prior to the show starting. I think it's more of a surprise to me than it is to you, actually.
I'm pretty sure that it is.
Damn it. Well, Mr. Blood in your eyes, in my eyes, in your eyes. You're up, sir.
Yes, I am.
I thought that was it.
You thought that was going to be a shock to me?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, whatever. Anyways, are you ready, sir?
I am absolutely and positively ready.
Got it.
Go for it.
So, would you rather live in a tiny home in a luxurious area or live in a mansion in a not luxurious area?
Like, I'm not even gonna lie to y'all. Ever since the invention of tiny homes, like I think the first episode that they talked about tiny homes on the Home Improvement Network and such, I was intrigued and all about it. So there's no question. I would love to live in a tiny home.
Hmm.
Just so you know, this man is not tiny by no means.
I mean, well, I think most people know my size.
Okay.
I could live in a tiny home though. Like I definitely have, I have tiny home tendencies.
Would you rather never shave again or never have facial hair again?
Well, okay, you should have rethought that question. I barely have facial hair.
But what I'm saying is, so then you have spotty hair and you can't ever shave it again.
Yeah, I'm okay with either, because neither is a problem. I guess never have facial hair again, but I really don't care because I don't have much of it anyway.
Got it. Would you rather compete a 1500 or sit through a spelling bee?
Really? What is it with y'all in the 1500s? Like, good God. Listen, I gave at the office. Y'all already know I've done all that I could do. Oh, what is the question? Would I rather compete in another 1500 or sit through a spelling bee?
Correct.
Oh, I'll sit through 5 spelling bees. What's wrong with you, woman?
Would you rather forever coach in a polo or in a long sleeve?
Forever coach in a polo or a long sleeve?
Polo. So like, okay.
Polo.
Would you rather coach an 8U basketball team or an 8U baseball team?
Ooh, I'd rather coach an AU baseball team.
Got it.
AU hoops is fun though. I'm not gonna lie. AU hoops is a lot of fun. I have coached an AU basketball team. That's fun. But AU baseball team is awesome.
Bless all of you coaches who coach a single digit aged team of some sorts.
Hey, I'm telling you right now, I coached an undefeated AU baseball team and they were pretty sure they were the 27 Yankees. They didn't want to give up. They didn't want to give up runs.
Would you rather never know any of the gifts that you'll receive at Christmas or know some of the gifts that you'll receive at Christmas?
Oh, okay. So here's a piece of my underbelly. I low-key love surprises. So I would absolutely revel in never knowing my Christmas presents. Like at all. Like I am like the kids. Like a tiny present that is heartfelt that I don't know about, like hits me. I love that. So yeah.
Got it.
Well, I mean, gentlemen, I don't get the like, why would you want to know your presents? I don't get that. Because if I know it, I want it. Right. Like if I knew I was, you know, like that whole, like, you know, people getting the cars with the bow. If I knew I was getting the car, I'd want the car.
You're getting the car.
But I'm saying if like you didn't buy the car that day. My point is like if I already know I'm getting a car on Christmas, when did you buy it? December 12th? Can I have it December 12th? Because it don't make no sense to me to stand around and wait. Like this, what are we waiting for? If I know already that I'm getting it, what are we waiting for?
Maybe that's the element of surprise.
Okay. Bye, Felicia.
Just kidding. Gentlemen, the floor is yours for would you rather.
Would you rather always lose the championship game or never make the playoffs?
That's a solid question.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I can't wait for this answer, but I love the question.
I just want to say for the record, these are horrible circumstances. And I would have to rethink my life choices if I was either of these people.
Buffalo, but
these are the two people that I have to be, I would rather have never been relevant than to be relevant. I could not be a member of the Buffalo Bills. Right? Because, like, look, by definition, they're a dynasty. They made Super Bowl mm-hmm. 4 years in a row. Yes, they lost all they four, which then makes you some sort of special colossal loser. No.
Why are you
a colossal loser? Because you made it to the Super Bowl 4 years in a row.
You want to know why? Because the impoverished nations in third world countries around the world think that you're a four-time champion.
Oh, man. I mean, wow. As long as somebody thinks you're a champion, you're good, right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Dropped him off. And for the record, it got worse every single time.
Like every time.
Okay, every time. See, and I hear you, but they were there.
They were there.
And so
that's
so
cool the first two times.
Okay. Well, on the flip side of that, there's no way I don't ever want to be relevant at anything that I do on a consistent basis.
Well,
because if you're not relevant, why are you doing it?
For the record, I said both of them are off.
Your question.
Wait a minute. No, I don't mind the interruption. So wait, is he saying, because I don't think he answered it yet.
It did answer.
He's saying he'd rather be the Dallas Cowboys than the old school Buffalo Bills? Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Yes. Fired.
But no, it's not even the Dallas Cowboys. It's the New York Jets. I'd rather like never make the playoffs than get there and lose every year. No.
Well, but didn't the Jets win the Super Bowl?
Not in my lifetime.
But they won it. So get off the Jets. They got a chip. Man.
Not in my lifetime. I have no ocular proof of this.
Oh, there's video. I'll send it to you.
I've seen the video of Joe Namath waving his finger.
That's right.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I enjoyed that question.
That was win question of the year. That was really
good. That was a great question.
Like the governor.
Very governor-esque question. I like it. Forethought, made him uncomfortable. I get it.
I mean, 100%. Like that was a great question.
I have it on good authority that the audience likes it when I'm able to come up with petty questions.
Oh, here we go.
Of course. You know what? Hold on. This is my shock face.
Well, no, I know I like it. I just wasn't aware that the audience liked it as much.
Yeah, I'm sure you found good authorities that love the fact that you're petty.
Yeah, very good authorities. So the petty question of the moment is, would you rather complete the mission that you claim your God put you on or get $5 million?
Of which they don't have ready for you yet.
But it's coming.
Small detail.
But it's coming.
Get $5 million. See, let me tell you something. I don't know what his plan is, but I'm going to tell y'all something. If it was me, I would turn the internet on its ear. I would take my new job and take my $5 million and then donate $1 million to Jackson State and drop the mic and walk off and dare somebody to say something.
Mm-hmm. That would be awesome.
So that's me. I don't know what Coach Prime's plan is. I'm just going to say this. If you watched any of, because I've seen three different ones. If you watch any of the video clips of his conversations with the Jackson kids, his conversations with the Colorado kids, or his just got hired press conference, if you watch any of that, you know for sure he is going to be really successful at Colorado and that he's a problem. He's a problem at the Power Five level because.
Save it.
Yes.
To be continued.
Yeah. This way, we know this much. We know he can recruit. How about that? We know he can recruit.
Sir Lucius.
I just want to know, would you rather attend this year's Super Bowl or this year's NCAA Final Four?
I would rather attend this year's Super Bowl.
Okay.
I guess being selfish, that is the one major sporting event I have not ever been to. I've been to an NCAA Final Four. I have been to a World Series. I've even been to an NBA championship. I've never been to a Super Bowl. And it's funny, it's so much less about the game, I think, right? Like, I think going to the Super Bowl, to me, I would have to like experience all of it and make it a spectacle, because if it's about watching the game, it's definitely better to do it at home. Definitely better. So, but the simple answer to your question is I would like to attend the Super Bowl and watch Patrick Mahomes get his second Super Bowl.
Right there with
you. I said it.
Right there with
you. I just want you to know, like, these colors don't run. Like, I said it from the beginning of the year, and I'm not going to unsay it. He's going to win the MVP, and they're going to win the title.
Is it MVP?
Yeah. I'm not sure why would you say it like that?
He's in the running, sure.
Is there a better statistical candidate that I'm missing?
Jalen Hurts.
Again, look at the statistics and then try me again.
Listen, well, let me help.
I love Jalen Hurts.
We can sell the argument. You know, like I tried to tell you, 6 weeks ago, we're going to be in this playoff. The Chiefs are absolutely going to win the title, and Mahomes is absolutely going to be the MVP. And just write it down. I said it.
He has spoken. He has spoken.
Take that to the bookie. Make sure you put it down on that one.
Hey, Sir Lucius said
not
it.
Us.
So we going to do us. It.
His track record in the NFL is not nearly as impressive.
You know what though?
I'm not so sure it's as bad as you think it is though.
I'm running with it because I was already on that track and in that lane since day one. So I have said since the beginning where my feet lie. So
yeah, look, hey, look, Stevie Wonder can see that Mahomes is going to win the MVP. So come on now.
I mean, these are facts. TBH.
All right. Well, to be determined and to be decided later. But until then, we are going to get to our heartbeat props. And Well, behind the scenes, give Mahomes some well wishes. But in front of the scenes, we'll give some people who need to be recognized for who they are and what they're doing. Anybody?
Mine is pretty simple and succinct. Heartbeat props to the state of Georgia. Drop the mic.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh.
Too much.
It's just the epitome of low-hanging fruit, right? Like, like yes. Yes.
I was going that direction anyway. And let's be clear, you know, everybody knows, should know, I'm a political nerd. Like, I love this stuff. I'm entertained by it. I'm fascinated by it. It's one of my, you know, other hobbies. I'm not going to sit here and just praise be to Georgia because we had to do it twice.
Yes.
So thank you for, you know, sanity reigning supreme in the end.
Yes.
I'm going to need y'all not make us sweat it out like that because.
They really, waited to the last man. Hour.
Like, man. Really, though? But hey, better late than not at all.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully. And. You know, I just, my God, that was a lot.
It was a lot.
You know, and seriously, because I know a lot of people that watch this probably aren't like political junkies. I hope you actually understand how important that was. Not because Herschel Walker's an idiot and doesn't belong in the chair, but like the fundamental difference between how the Senate can function at 51-49 versus 50-50. I could sit here for an hour and talk about it, but just go look it up because it's critical.
It's critical.
It's critical. So thank you, Georgia. Yeah, whatever.
My heartbeat props go out to the compliance departments across the nation right now. I mean, not that they're not never working, but they're working.
Dude,
they're like Troy Polamalu in that commercial. They're never not working.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So
never not working.
Donuts, coffee, smoothies, I don't know what it is, or a simple thank you to them, like, I think is going to go a mile and a half further than it would on a normal day. I'm blessed to have a compliance department that I get along with and I love and I respect and communicate with, like, on the hour when I'm in the office. So shout out to all of them, especially those at TCU.
You want me to go last? I
definitely want you to go last. man. You know, mine is a weird one, but it just kind of is what it is. Like, my heartbeat props go out to the parents who endeavor to be travel ball, travel stuff parents, because you don't realize that you've worked all of your life to be an adult, to have these wonderful things, to find out that actually what you've lived all your life for is to have your entire social calendar dominated by a 10-year-old or a 13-year-old. And you will spend, as I shared with you guys earlier today, you will have some travel person glibly say, it's only $10,000. A scholarship is worth way more. So, you know, cheer up, you're fine. Right. At the end of the day, my heartbeat props go out to all of the travel parents and the, you know, those who have decided that I'm going to put all my chips in to let my child see how good they can be. Right. And for those of you who are not travel parents, you don't understand like how all in that is. Right. There's no such thing as family vacations. If you're actually all in, there's no such thing as time to yourself, right? You look at your calendar, you see all the off weekends, and then immediately those off weekends, because they're off, they are now filled with baseball, basketball, track, whatever, soccer, whatever the heck it is. and you lose friendships over it. Like, well, how come you can't ever go? How come we can't ever like have a couples date? How come we don't ever go do this and this? Well, because my kids got baseball, soccer, track, whatever the heck it is. So I've been in that field here lately. I've been feeling that a lot. And for me, it's not difficult, but I live a life that is dominated by athletics. But to all the normative parents, the ones who are, you know, accountants and bookkeepers and work in a cubicle, who spend all of their, you know, little extra shekels to make sure that little Timmy and little Tina have the opportunity to see how great they can be. That's God's work, and there's no question about it. And my heartbeat props go out to them this week, because it's definitely a thankless job. Heck, it's even thankless from the child that you're spending all the money for. So my hat goes off to all of you. And
my heartbeat props go to my extended family. As many of you know, I lost my mom a few weeks ago, and I cannot thank you guys enough, for starting with the people on the tiles here, and you know, my Panther family from my high school, my brothers of Omega Psi Phi, my track and field family at the University of Florida. And you know, I want to stop because I'm gonna miss a lot of people, but I just want to say thank you to everybody who's reached out to me, who's consoled me, who's, you know, checked on me daily to make sure I'm okay. And I am good, and I'm only going to get better as each passing day. But I want to say thank you to everyone for the outpouring of love and support for me and my family. Thank you very much.
Amazing. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Definitely so, wanted you to go last.
Yeah.
Yeah. I warned you. So, yeah.
Listen, you didn't have to warn me. I knew where you were going. So
Years later, we finally are getting the feel of that one.
Yeah. So,
3 years later.
I'll get out the way happily with that one.
All right. Well, gentlemen on the tiles, ladies and gentlemen out there in the ether, thank you so much for spending the time with us. We will be seeing most of you, if not via tiles or in person, at the convention next week. I think we have some, I've made some progress on some details, so we'll release those as the time comes. But buckle up, bring a coat. And let's try to stay warm.
Bring two coats.
Whoa. I know, right? Thanks, Governor, for crushing us on that one.
Hold on now. Bring a coat. We're not doing LLC Live outside.
No.
I quit. I'm out.
But if you plan on going outside, bring two coats, because it's going to be cold.
Oh, my gosh. If that weather report is correct. Oof.
Yes.
Lord of mercy.
Man, I mean, we might be in Denver a few extra days, y'all, but. We're gonna leave that. I'm gonna leave that in Texas in the 80 degree weather right now, yes. And just.
Yes.
So, all right, everyone, have a great evening. Have a great weekend, and we'll see each other soon. Bye.
When the lights come on, the road just gets running. When the lights come on, opponents mess the plumbing. Heard you like it warm, hot, knife the butter. Truth hit 'em hard, knock 'em off that rebuttal. Tsunami, tidal wave to your puddle. Tough love punch when arms, little brothers. Athletics, double LC, and there's no others. Track and field's pacing, we're peeled to go further. Hey, Wiley, Coyote, it's Roadrunners. Feels like you know us, you've been with us the whole summer. If not for this quarantine, these four corners wouldn't be here, but we're here, so start learning. You gotta earn your stripes, gotta get your scars. Show you how to fight, but show us who you are. You lack experience, but still you wanna talk. And who is actually talking to? Your circle's kinda small. Heads prevail when the backbone's strong. Gotta keep it coming, no, it won't last long. Pass or fail, then sell the sad song. And if you don't check yourself, then that's wrong. Just trying to give you the real that you asked for. So why you keep cutting us off to ask more? We put it in slow-mo, but you fast forward. Athletics, LLC, the task force.